You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, everybody. This is securityjabber.com, and we are back. And better than ever. And beautiful. Yes. Anyway, something like that.
Some Tanner. Of us. Definitely Tanner.
Tanner, yes. Several people are much darker in the studio.
Mm-hmm. That's a big hurdle for IT people, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
Usually they keep us, you know.
Under the fluorescent lights.
Under the fluorescent lights.
I was outside
can you
for
get a photo
5
tan?
Minutes.
You're white as paper, Jason.
Yeah, we're just rubbing your face.
You're only out in the sun for 5 minutes. Why are you so red?
I don't know.
Standing in front of the barbecue, I guess.
That's right. This is your ever-present
hovering master
co-host, Dave Glenn. With me tonight, I have, as usual,
Matt Thompson,
Jason Brown,
Dan Gregory,
Todd Besky,
and on the sound.
Jess.
On the sound thing? It's Jess.
We always keep her in the shadows, huh?
I know.
No, Jess?
It feels more natural. Last time you guys made me go last, and it was so weird to be
you guys ever see that show, yeah. New Girl?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so
I like sing along with the intro.
I bet you do.
Because it's my name.
Right. So now every time my wife and I somehow got hooked on that dumb show, and every time we watch it, We're all singing, and then the last time we watched it, I'm like, it's Jess. And I was like, oh, Jess. Yeah, I know it, Jess. Anyway, random.
I wish we had video in the studio, because when he asked, do you guys watch New Girl? Everybody looked collectively like, what is he talking about? And you two, like, locked eyes, like, oh, I love that show.
I'm like, yay! I love it.
That's Jess.
It's just stupid.
I like Zoe Dish, whatever her name is. Yeah. What's her name?
I have the complete ignorance. I have no idea.
Like, Doe
New Girl. I have no idea.
Deschanel.
I'm a fan of Zoe. Yeah.
How do you say her last name?
Deschanel, I think.
Deschanel?
Yeah, Deschanel. I don't know.
Dasher and Dancer.
There's not enough Zoes for me to care what her last name is.
Well, today we're going to bring you the Netflix episode that we never talked about. Just kidding, guys. Today we don't have any special guests in the studio, so you are
you're saying we're
stuck
not special?
With all of us special short bus people.
Jason's been here enough, he's not special
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Jason never was. Yeah.
If everybody were special, then no one would be special.
That's right. And as my sister says, normal's just a setting on the dryer. So all that aside, from the news of the weird, UK doctors are using Snapchat to share patient scans and other records. From the files of This Is a Bad Idea, the NHS hasn't embraced the digital revolution as much as it should have, says a report commissioned by Google's DeepMind Health following an ICO investigation on dealings between the firm and the Royal Free NHS Trust. So it says that doctors often share patient scans using Snapchat and thereby rendering the data vulnerable to hackers.
What are you talking about? Snapchat disappears instantly, right, guys?
Yeah.
Right. It's gone forever with no record whatsoever.
No record whatsoever. That's not stored anywhere on the interwebs. This is just odd and random. 1.6 million patient records with Google DeepMind without prior consent.
Wow.
Crazy. So first of all, what is Google DeepMind? Do you guys know what that is? Google DeepMind Health?
Cool project name.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a great project name. So we got to dig into that a little bit. But you know, we work with a lot of healthcare organizations and healthcare providers, and it seems to me as though it's interesting when you talk to a healthcare security executive, the first thing that you realize is that in healthcare, patient care is the number one concern. At the risk of anything else, patient, which by the way makes me feel great, from a healthcare perspective, I'm glad that they're about saving patients and quality of care first. Jason's looking at me like he's laughing his head off.
Nope, I don't. I guess I'm going to be the guy on the disagree. I'm disagree.
Shocker.
Okay, yeah. Disagree. So why do you disagree?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, there's a big local hospital here, for example, that I went to for 3 weeks, and I had this chronic pain in my side that just wouldn't go away. I mean, it was debilitating. And then all my organs shut down. So, like, my liver, my gallbladder, my appendix, all that stuff shut down.
Your piano, too?
Mm. Yeah. Was there for 3 weeks. Nothing's wrong with you. on the way out. On the way out, they're like, oh, by the way, you got lung cancer. Like, what? They never mentioned it once. So, no, I don't agree. I don't
agree.
Are
you serious?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't have lung cancer, but that's the only thing that they could come up with in 3 weeks of being there.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, it's not worrying.
Wait, so do you have lung cancer?
No.
Oh, thank God.
No.
Okay.
Well, they surely had me believing it at that particular moment in time. So
they jokingly said you had lung cancer?
No. I had to go back there 3 times for scans to determine whether or not this nodule in my lungs was growing or not. You know, meanwhile, I'm pissing myself.
Right,
you know,
right,
because
you got lung cancer.
So, no, I don't agree. You know, all of my experiences with the hospitals here in this area are horrible. It's all the same hospital.
Interesting.
But, so, no, I don't agree. I'm going to be that guy.
Wow.
See, well, I thought you were going to say that you went there for 3 weeks for, like, an engagement, and it was going down this road.
No,
but
I was there.
It was an engagement. It was just not the consulting.
There was money to be had. They got me for $130,000. All the insurance company, of course. But
wow. $130,000 insurance bill.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so don't get me started on that. And the fact that...
Sounds like a campaign starting.
Yet again... yet again, we're stuck in a situation where we're not ever gonna get any bill passed to replace Obamacare or whatever. It seems like an exercise in futility every time we talk about healthcare. Anyway, I digress. The fact of the matter is that when you talk to healthcare organizations, often, not always, but often, they will insist that patient care is the most important thing. And so with patient care being the most important thing, and they're told, you know, IT security guys at hospitals or healthcare providers are told, make sure that you focus on patient care. Don't let any information security situation interfere with patient care. We would rather have the records be exposed than deliver poor patient care. And the fact is, a lot of clinicians, a lot of physicians end up using Snapchat or other things, Facebook messaging, to transfer that information. Easiest route possible. So there's all sorts of things wrong with this. Wow. I know we went down a rabbit hole with that, but what do you guys think?
But wouldn't you say that patient care, right, in the realm of patient care, wouldn't that also include being mindful of that patient's personal identity? That's caring for the patient, right?
Oh, for sure.
That's just as damaging. Oh, yeah, we fixed your broken leg or your whatever it is. We stole your identity in the process.
Yeah, so
there you go.
You're financially ruined.
Yeah, but your leg's better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I was trying to figure out what the positive that they were looking to achieve, though,
so,
right? So back to the point of that, I mean, I know that we're just looking at the bad of this, but somehow there had to have been some huge cost savings that somehow they saw.
Well, being close to someone that works in this industry, this is from the UK. That's one part. They don't have the EHR laws that we do that have been enacted here, which basically means you need to share that information. So even small practices have started moving over to electronic healthcare records and sharing in some form of application. A lot of times this is driven by the types of doctors. So you have to take in consideration the average age of a doctor. And so right now in the U.S., all the young doctors go to pediatrician care. They want to be with young people. They want to be with people growing up. They don't want to do elderly care. And the only doctors that want to do age 50 and above, especially into the 60s and 70s, are doctors that have been pushed out of the conventional hospitals because they haven't adapted to these EHR different types of methods. So even here in this article, they specifically cite the reason why these doctors are doing this is because they see their day-to-day activity of different types of technology making their life better. So they naturally just migrate over and bring this into their day-to-day practices. I can tell you firsthand, this is exactly what's happening in these cases, that when you have paper trails that are so long and so many forms to fill out and they're so daunting and they don't have automation – much like IT people get killed with, you know, alert fatigue, so do doctors. And the more paperwork they have, they find without automation, without the digital ways of streamlining it, they're going to continue to do things like this because they just don't have the time. Especially, I believe that the UK has a national healthcare system, a single-payer type of system. They're burdened with paperwork. It's all going to one place. And so if you have these outside laying hospitals that haven't been updated by the federal government, in the UK, it's just like an IT department. If you're going to be the office of no, they're going to find a way around. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing applies
right.
here.
Yeah. No, for sure.
So is it necessity being the mother of invention, right? I mean, doctors just need to do what they need to do. They figure out a way to do it, and there you go.
Life will find a way.
They don't think they're
Jurassic
doing any
Park.
Harm.
Yeah. I want to work that in there. My kids are in Jurassic Park
nicely
right
done,
now.
Sir. Nicely done.
I think Jess might need a doctor, too. if anybody heard those noises in the background a little bit earlier, that was Jess.
It's Jess.
So this kind of like segues us into the next thing, right? Or am I too early on that? The whole life will find a way.
Life will find a way.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So the next thing on the board here was DJI locking down its drones against a growing army of DIY hackers. So we've talked about this in the past, but the story just keeps getting cooler and cooler. Right? They're expanding upon it. We're seeing a whole army of individual drone owners that are just furious about these ideas that we will have a company that sells us a product and then tells us how we can use it, tells us that we have to register it and have these firmware updates and things that are mandatory and or intrusive, right? So
wait a second though. Don't you think though that's just capitalism. As long as there are competitors, just don't buy DJI. As long as there are competitors, just don't buy DJI.
This is episode 14.
This never happened.
Episode 14.
There's so many competitors out there. I think people like the fact that DJI has been around forever. They're a pioneer in this particular technology. And with that, they've got a lot of cool things. They're also, I believe, if somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, they're a Chinese company. And with that, you know, comes the stigma of, you know, we're going to steal everything and sell it to you back at a tenth of the price. I don't know if that applies here or not. But, you know, when you think about DJI, you think about, well, you know, I can get a pretty decent drone for a pretty reasonable price in comparison to going out and buying a $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 rig to do the same thing, right? So, you know, it's interesting from that respect, but we're also seeing this in other types of technology, farming. You've heard me here before talk about farming, where farming is one of those large technology things that people just don't realize they have so many computers. Mm. They have, you know, things watching their herds. Mm-hmm. They have crop, you know, they've got Wi-Fi in their crops so that they can have all this technology inside all of their all their combines and everything. But
cow watching.
Cow watching. Oh, hey, we got a cow. We got a cow reference. I didn't even think about that.
Moo.
I will pay you after the show, Jason.
I'll say moo again.
This is why I make the big bucks.
That's right.
With that, you know, we're seeing these same like third party groups who are making firmwares for both the DJI drones so they can circumvent these securities. And I mean, very basic securities, right? Your drone is not allowed to fly over this amount of feet. It's not allowed to go more than this fast. Those kinds of things are what they're talking about in these types of firmwares. So basically, they're jailbreaking them. I'm going to be able to do cooler, faster, more exciting things with my drone because I'm going with this jailbroken firmware. Tractors, honest to God, this is a thing. And it's come around full time. Matt and I have talked about this a couple times, I believe, where was it John Deere, you know, they impose these things through firmware into their hardware, and you see like these Ukrainian and whatever hackers making firmwares for these tractors here in America. It is so crazy how these things just happen. You know,
yeah, a couple years ago, John Deere actually served a couple of farmers in Idaho with a lawsuit threatening to repo their John Deere equipment that they own because they broke the EULA. When you buy a John Deere tractor, there's a EULA that goes along with it saying you will not modify it and modify the software. And so two or three years
ago,
there was a full-blown lawsuit brought out because they're it can go twofold. You can look at it and go, all right, well, I guess if I'm an auto manufacturers are falling in the same thing where if you mod a vehicle or you reset the ECU.
It's been going on for years.
But in this case, you know, John Deere said, well, we make one limited product, and if it does something wrong, then it gets out well, my product's bad.
Oh.
And likelihood of farmers having hardcore technical skills to modify firmware could have some negative feedback.
Yeah. Who was it, Ferrari, that did that with their paint?
Started off with a... Well, it was
like you weren't allowed to change their red paint, right?
Yeah, they copyrighted.
Yep.
Yeah,
and Lamborghini started off making tractors, by the way. So
did they?
There you go.
Did they really?
Yep.
Yeah. Huh. So like, if you paint your red Ferrari or whatever, they can come repo the car, even though you paid cash.
Yeah, it's insane.
So in this article, though, you're saying as far as these copyright, I mean, they're saying that there's no real. So DJI has real no legal case here, right? And I guess that's part of the whole thing that they're bringing up. I think they said that they're damned if they do and then damned if they don't, and that regulators expect them, a company, to use geofencing technology to prevent potentially lethal incidents involving its drones.
This is true. If you look at it, though, DJI is doing something a little bit different. Further in the article, it's kind of actually buried in this article. They're starting to, we talked about a couple weeks ago, they were alerting people, hey, you need to update your software on your drone or it's going to be locked down.
Okay.
Now they're just force feeding it down. As soon as it makes an internet connection, they're just force feeding it. And so there's entire forums and Reddit and Facebook pages and YouTube videos now spawning up in this article where they're in full-on revolt. Like, don't download it.
Yeah.
The counter side of this is another company called, what is it, Copter Safe. Is charging a service to be able to download, I guess, hardened or tested firmware for about $200. And so now they're offering a service. So you have this entire like entity that's starting to spin up, and I don't know the legality of that. But where this is coming in is DJI is now saying, we're trying to protect you against hackers and this being used for malicious purposes, and we're trying to comply with the government, and you guys are breaking it. I know jailbreaking a phone has, you know, the worst thing that happens is your phone doesn't work.
Right.
With a drone, if you put on one of these firmwares, how do you guarantee that there isn't malicious code being injected into that to be a network sniffer on your network? Or
same thing with a cell phone.
Right. Yeah.
So far, I see no difference, to tell you the truth. Well, one flies and
well,
one doesn't.
Well, yeah, no. When you think about it, though, I mean, when you're talking about a device that could potentially injure someone,
right?
Somebody could fly that into a jet engine. Someone could. I mean, there's all kinds of things you could conceivably do with a drone. I'm really, really, really for the idea that people should be able to fly their drones and do as they please. I'm also a big proponent of the idea that if you fly one over my house and if you do it repeatedly, it's probably I'm going to turn it into skeet. So, you know.
All right. So on that same topic, I was at the beach, right, and not far from where I was. I saw the guy with his drone. The first words that came out of my mouth were perving. guy's flying down the beach, I'm like, this is kind of awkward.
I saw it really weird. At the beach I was at. We were all sitting out, and you know, most of the people I was with had not seen a drone of that size. It was a fairly sizable drone. And it got to a fixed position. You guys can guess what fixed position it was and the type of audience that was underneath it.
Wow.
And they're like, what is that drone doing? Is it recording the lighthouses? I'm like, yeah, it's recording the entire beach lighthouses that are a quarter mile out, about 150 feet below, you know, the college kids that are out sunbathing. And you could not see the person flying the drone. I looked all over the beach, and they had to be a half mile away at the other side of the pier doing the creepy stuff. In fact, I saw this when we went to Sleeping Bear Dunes. You cannot have drones at Sleeping Bear Dunes now.
They have signs?
Really?
Yep. When you go there, it's a no fly.
That would
drone.
Be a place I would Picture think maybe you would want to on. Have your drone.
Yeah, so, for sure.
We had a discussion about it, and my best bet, I'm guessing, is that because they drop off so fast, when someone drops a drone down there, the first inclination is, oh, I got to go get my drone. They go down the bottom of the dune, and then the tide comes in, and they have to get Coast Guard rescue.
Right.
So that's probably what that is for, or so they don't, you know, run into the massive crowds of people that are all flying around there. So
it's a pretty busy area, too.
Paranoia as well. I mean, it could just simply be that same. This is a recreational area, no different than a sporting event. Mm-hmm. We don't want them here for, you know, fake terrorist reasons or whatever.
Well,
who knows?
The dunes are federally controlled now, so.
Yeah.
I saw a really cool video the other day of guys in Hawaii fishing with them. I don't know if you've seen this.
I have not seen that.
Was pretty awesome.
How do they do that?
So they take the drone up. It's got the fishing line connected to it with the lure and hook. It flies out. You can look down and see where the tuna actually are. You can go drop the hook right on top of them, and you reel in your damn
Shark
tuna.
Week, here you come. Yeah. Drone fishing at Shark Week.
It was so ridiculous. I'm like, you're not even playing at this point anymore.
I want to go fishing now. Really bad.
Not even fishing.
Nice. All right, so you mentioned one thing about the Ukrainians and how it tied into John Deere. Mm-hmm. I guess the Ukrainians kind of tie into our next topic. Are we good to move on?
Well, I don't think so. There's a couple other things I want to talk about here. From an OT perspective, from the whole Internet of Things perspective, we've been talking about this for a while. So when you think about the ramifications of this, I think rules like this, and then as we have court cases on this, when you think about a drone, and by the way, my middle son has a drone. He's taken some amazing pictures. Some beautiful stuff in northern Michigan. I love the photography that he's done with that. But I also had a very specific conversation with him about invading other people's personal space, and I believe that my son's gonna abide by that. He's a good kid, but he's also very interested in taking things apart and putting them back together. And so I would assume that Colin's going to do his own experimentation with, he has a GoPro Karma and he has a 3DR Solo. And with both of those, I believe that he's already messed around with it a little bit and gone down some paths with that. It'll be interesting to see what sort of legislation comes out of this. It'll also be interesting to see how people apply that to, this is a drone. It's a flying machine. It definitely has a potential. It's a piece of spy gear.
Yeah.
When you think about it, I mean, the drones that we have now, it's something Q made in a Bond movie, that's where we are. I've seen the future and the future's now. So I think we need to keep an eye on and maybe, we've talked about having some regular segments and stuff. I think we need to start talking to people that are part of the connected car process, that are part of the, part of the digital banking process. I'd like to talk to some, mm-hmm. I'd like to talk to Kohler and see what they're planning to do from a plumbing perspective. And when you look at companies like Samsung and LG and, some of the cutting edge, technology companies that also make washers and dryers and refrigerators and stuff like that. I think this is opening up a whole new world of information security and data protection that is about layers upon layers.
Is that they're talking about jailbreaking these devices, right? You're not always going to jailbreak your TV or your fridge. And a lot of the IoT, I think when it comes to a car, maybe that comes into play. But I mean, I think when you're looking at jailbreaking a drone, I think like Matt mentioned, I mean, I think that's the real scenario is, what happens if I can put a sniffing device on this and I can go close to somebody's house and actually start trying to...
Smelling them?
Yeah. Smell you. Smell like poop.
That is brilliant, Jason. That's my favorite thing you've ever said.
You smell and different.
I smell you.
You smell different when you're awake.
Capturing people's passwords,
Smell. No, I
you smell different when you're awake. Wow. Well, and then when you look at the technology, the Moore's Law thing is it's twice as powerful in half the space or whatever. Think about when we get these little nanobots that are super tiny, using some sort of organic storage.
Quantum.
You've got a bee that flies in through someone's window, and I mean, then it starts getting a little freaky.
Well, I mean, I think the real to-dos here, right? We're saying, okay, DJI is one of the more basic, more functional, easy-to-use drones. They've baked some things in there like geo locations and things like that, geofencing. You start putting firmwares on there that allow you to overcome that. You're now capable of being an idiot, for lack of a better way of putting it, and now you can drop drugs into the local prison, which is a huge problem right now. Drones are dropping drugs in there like crazy. Guns, drugs, you name it. So you've you've got that scenario. Wow. You've got obviously terror related scenarios, and then you know what I think is really interesting. On top of all these different things, you've got this cottage industry popping up where they want $200 per device for a firmware upgrade,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of the guys out there are going, "That's too buku. I'm going to do reverse engineer your stuff, and I'm just going to put it out there for free." So that's already happened to CopterSafe.
So by jailbreaking the device, really? They're therefore not having the geofence protection
sure.
available.
That's what DJI
right?
is saying. They're, yeah. they're saying even in Iraq and Syria, you can't use their drones in other locations.
Right.
I guess my question is, once you jailbreak one of these and you violate the EULA, what stops DJI from... you know, forcing down software at some point in the future, you know, getting around the get around. And then the next time you fire up your copter, it flies really high up and then flies straight down to the ground and crashes. And they break your copter.
Well, I mean, there's probably, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. I mean.
Why? You already violated your legal contract. Right. You said.
What if it hits a kid?
Huh?
What if it hits a kid?
Yeah, I'm not saying that not bad things are going to happen, but they could yeah. just say...
Well, it's going to happen because they only wrote it to hit kids. So they wrote the new firmware.
Well, I guess that's where they're going with the whole thing is by you jailbreaking the device, you know, that's why it's become quite an issue is can I actually go after you personally for the violation of the or copyright of the agreement?
Or can they do something like, you know...
And right now they can't.
Stuxnet. Make the motors turn, you know, in opposite directions or at super high, you know, mm-hmm. RPMs and burn out the battery or burn out, you know. That's right. All I can see is their comeback to this is, okay, if everybody's going to start violating this, because I think what they're most worried about is all of a sudden the government agencies coming after them and saying, your equipment is being used for nefarious purposes. Mm-hmm. You're not doing your due diligence. And they're what right. is the recourse for that?
And they say we're comfortably located in China. Who cares?
Right.
Right.
Mm. The old China defense, I've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of other countries without extradition, do you
yeah.
want
to? Right, moving ahead, right into as our new ransomware of the week, it seems like. Hit the button. It's Bing. Now. And I think WannaCry was maybe the night's piece that started it. So after the WannaCry, now you've got Petya. And again, it seems very...
Not Petya.
It was Petya, then it was...
Not Petya. Petrap, Panetya. It seemed like there's a number of kind Rube. Of variations. But again, I mean, it came from looking at very similar exploits and vulnerabilities from WannaCry, taking it a little bit step further. I mean, really looking at the same exploits, but then trying to mimic some of the same behaviors. The one thing it looked like that it changed or went a little bit more into encrypting the files on your machine and then actually kind of rendering your whole machine useless. But it looked like the payment process is kind of where they fell short. Please send a check to our P.O. Box.
Right. P.O. Box 99, Pueblo, Colorado, 99038.
So
my name is...
I mean, I guess obviously it was for malicious intent, and you look at some of the information that they say about it, and it was actually done really well. I mean, some of the other key points you see, you know, is that the code was written well, obfuscated to protect against AV detection using a couple of different techniques, fake Microsoft signatures, XOR encrypted shellcode payload. Another interesting point, it says, although the worm is camouflaged to look like the infamous Petya ransomware, it has an extremely poor payment pipeline, of course. And, of course, the instructions are pretty simple or are kind of being handled through email or P.O. box. So I guess, again...
Shakes head.
When you look at it...
It's just insane.
I mean, it is a wiper. It is there to encrypt your files. It's there to kind of make your laptop a hockey puck. That is kind of strange. They wouldn't make an easier vehicle for you to actually get the keys to then decrypt it. Typically, that's where all the money is made in this kind of venture. So,
well, it wasn't designed. It was an actual targeted hit on
right.
the financial systems. Sean actually wrote a huge blog for CBI.
Sean Bertrand.
And one of the things that really he focused in on was that the way that this virus was written to move laterally through the environment. It said it was using PSExec and Mimcats. basically a tool known to all penetration testers designed to extract plain text passwords, hash, PIN code, and Kerberos tickets from memory.
Kerberos.
Yeah, I'm out of my range here, guys. So basically, for the average person out there, it wasn't meant to get in there and just encrypt things. It was meant to move laterally and disable the entire environment. And
right.
That was a different take on this.
Yeah, after it does say, it's used to encrypt a system volume, master file table, master boot record. It also said that it was then compromising credentials and using those credentials on the local network to try and hit other machines. And it was very targeted towards Ukrainian.
Who would target targets. Ukraine?
Scratch his head.
Can I take Russians for a Putin?
Putin?
Circle gets a square.
So any thoughts on this, Jason? I know a lot of these are near and dear to your hearts. I mean, it's just the flavor of the week. There's always going to be something. It's taken very similar techniques of what you're seeing. But again, looking at very specialized targets. And any thoughts, comments?
No.
No, I'm kidding. Great. Of course I do. I've got comments all day on this. Thoughts for miles. Ultimately, at the end of the day, this is a fog of war thing. I've said this a million times. I'm going to continue to keep saying it. It's too early to determine what these kinds of things are. We're still figuring out, shockingly, we're still researching Stuxnet, right? So, that's been years, and the idea that they come out and say, like, days into this, that we know for a fact that the code is fabulous and, the pipeline for payment is ridiculous and this is clearly a targeted attack and, it's disguised to look like it's a,
right.
trying to gain financial, revenue here. But it's too hard to say those things. I don't agree with it. I can't say for sure. Moving lateral is just the thing that you do. We already mentioned that any pen tester would do this. That's just a duh thing. Yep. You're trying to move lateral.
Why haven't other malware variants used this in the past?
Because it's not the simplest thing to do, as well as antivirus today. Even though we constantly hear antivirus is dead, finds this stuff constantly. Oh, I absolutely agree that it's not dead.
Yeah.
But the idea that, now is the appropriate time. This might be one of the last few times we see this type of, PS exec attack. I'm speculating.
Right. Yeah.
But it's harder and harder and harder to use this kind of lateral movement. We just had our expert here recently talking about all the things that he's doing in-house, and I guarantee you he would have stopped this based on the couple hours I was
talking
to him.
Yep.
That wouldn't be a thing for him.
No.
So at the end of the day...
I think you're right. I mean, like you said, the payment chain was poorly set up and designed. Mm-hmm. I think when I looked at another article, too, it said they were looking at $300 in Bitcoin. But again, I mean... It's masked as looking as something that's out there.
Stuff adds up.
But definitely a very, very targeted approach. That's why I kind of laugh and joke. I mean, they didn't seem like they even cared if they were getting money for.
Yeah.
Everything I've read has said it was not to gain money. It was to take down the Ukrainian financial system, that particular branch.
Right.
Insert sports team had X amount of good picks. They had so much money. They had great management. They went out there and flubbed the entire season. We can talk about this in any industry. And this, believe it or not, is an industry. We're talking about an industry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, huge. For sure. Not just a cottage industry either. This is big money, big prizes. I love it.
It still goes back to the one thing we always say is patch your systems, right? Look at these alerts. Look at these advisories. Even with this advisory, Microsoft had released a patch back in April. Microsoft patched vulnerability back in March. MS-17-010 bulletin. So again, here you go. Please patch this, and here's what you can do to prevent this spread. I mean, there's a lot of very simple things that can be done. I mean, I think it's cleaning up your house first.
For people who have legitimate software.
Yep.
For people who have good hardware, who aren't trying to make an argument that my antivirus, my updates, everything else I have slows my computer down. Everybody's still running spinning disks somehow in an SSD world. I can't figure that one out for the life of me. But at the end of the day, the pieces and parts that you're talking about that are awesome about this particular thing that, we're considering to be well done are easily purchased on the dark net.
You can go in there and find this stuff readily available for a cost. If you're willing to pay, you're willing to play. Or they're willing to play. So maybe they had a couple of good guys that helped them develop the actual attack, and the people that helped them with their pipeline are, you know, completely entry level. It would all be speculation. Even today, from a professional standpoint, those professionals are going to know a lot of these different things. And if they're not coming to the table and saying, well, if we're being honest with ourselves, it could be this as well, then they're not being honest with us. That's all I've got.
Yeah.
And on the U.S. side, do you guys think that these types of attacks are really forcing IT teams to get tight and start doing the basics again, like patching and making sure their systems are patched? And it's really pushing. Because Microsoft, everything that I read on the Microsoft site has been very, like, a marketing guy has wrote it like, hey, it's not Windows' problem. It's your IT guy's problem and your problem for not hitting updates every Tuesday.
It's easier said than done, though. As your organization gets bigger and bigger and bigger, you get 1,000, 10,000, 20, 30, 40, 50,000. So let's just say average size 20,000, right? You got 20,000 nodes in five different countries, right? If you want to try to keep those updated and patched, it's a monumental effort internally. Or if you're smart, you try to externalize that and give it to a third party. Either way, it takes a lot of time and effort to patch and make sure you're not going to break anything.
Right.
I think what drives a lot of the non-patching is fear. Fear of the unknown. Am I going to break my app? Am I going to bring my business down to its knees? They have one close call on the executives, or somebody will say, we are now going to institute a moratorium and a six-month hold on all patches, et cetera, et cetera. We've all seen it here with different customers.
Yep.
So those are the kind of things. If patching gets easier and more predictable, then things will change. But right now, there's a lot of unknown in patching as much as there is in not patching. A lot of people are really just kind of given up to the fact that, hey, you know, I'll deal with it when it happens type attitude, unfortunately.
Do you guys think with all these different types of attacks, will this drive more and more companies to do everything in the cloud, and you start getting almost like the old shell computers and running VMs on individual computers and getting away from your laptop?
Personally, I think the cloud is just another place to put your infrastructure and your servers. It's not the cloud. We have to remember that this is a data center.
But if it's consolidated, isn't it easier to patch?
Well, if it's consolidated, so is my data center internally. It's the same thing. It's just been consolidated somewhere else. My problem just moves. I still have the same problem.
So what you're
patching is always going to be a little bit tricky, at least the way it's set up now. That's my personal thought. I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, I'm right on board with you in that, you know, I guess I would word it a little different. I would say that, you know, a cloud provider is nothing more than a shared architect. So they have the hardware and sometimes licensing available to you at a discount because you're spreading those costs out amongst many customers. So multiple tenants, right?
Economical and performance gains only. That's really what you really get.
If you get a performance gain.
If.
Yeah,
if,
right?
Yeah,
so, you know, you get some really cool stability. So from a recovery point of view, that could happen. But we've also seen the flip side, where somebody flips a weird bit and all of a sudden all of Amazon's AWS goes down.
It's happened.
It's crazy.
For sure. Amazon? What's Amazon?
I think they're
the
guys.
Jungle.
I think they're the guys that are trying to take on Walmart or something, right?
They're winning on my doorstep. I can tell you that.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think you're going to see that you're probably better off, personal opinion, having in-house and hybrid, so private and public clouds. You know, old bare metal infrastructure is certainly a thing of the past unless you're cracking bitcoins with it. But at the end of the day, get that cloud stuff privately and out there where you can, you know, monetize that a little bit better, make money.
Where do you guys think these attacks are moving? So we've seen the lateral stuff. We've seen some of the ransomware. Do you think someone's actually going to get that magic formula together and in the coming months and actually be able to extract dollars in mass from the public?
Wow. The big one.
I don't know. That's what they pay me for. The big questions.
I don't know if I see dollars in mass from the public. I almost see like this is we're in early alpha of in moving into beta of, you know, if we're talking about this as a market and as a product. I think we're moving into beta of what can be done with these types of exploits. And so it becomes ever so much more important to pay mm-hmm. attention. And the thing that you hope for is that, man, you know how there's things that you want to say but you can't say them because you're afraid you'll put the idea in someone's head, but there's this idea that you want this to be, you hope that people are going to be responsible with their usage of stuff like this, because you could potentially do some very damaging things to some very critical systems just by being an idiot with this stuff. And the problem is so many people have access to this now that, you know, just to the raw data, you know, like Jason and Todd and like we've said, you know, there are marketplaces now for these things, and mm-hmm. and Joe Q Public has access to all this yeah. stuff, so
he can buy it.
I mean, I think these wipers are probably designed like this one. Of course, was not. I mean, this was definitely very targeted, but they tried to mask it. I think when you look at a wiper is something that's gonna probably hit Joe Public, and they're looking for money. Because most wipers are going to look for movies, pictures, videos, you know, files that would be common to you know, your family. Hey, if I lost all my pictures. But again, I mean, if we keep everything backed up on another hard drive or do some of those basic things, you know, if somebody turned my machine to a hockey puck, you know, I'm formatting and starting again.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think the larger scale, I mean, you're seeing more of these are gearing towards government. I mean, I think you're seeing where governments are hacking other governments or getting mm-hmm. involved in. I mean, I think the geopolitical world has now changed where most of these, I think they're using Joe Public as the test ground, kind of like Jason is saying. I mean, I think these are just ramping up, right? They're just trying to perfect their craft. And, you know, these wipers are just kind of distracting people. I mean, the ransomware stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever get to the point where, I don't know, for some reason when Dave was talking, I kept thinking about every mafia movie you've ever seen where the guys walk in and be like, you know, it'd be a shame if someone came in and broke up your store. Do you think we get to the point where, obviously that wouldn't fly here in the U.S.
The threat is enough.
But in third world countries, they say, well, you know what, you pay us a protection right, yeah. we'll make sure nobody messes with you, and if they do, there'll be consequences.
I think so.
I think it's only a matter of time before we see a marriage of the, you know, very political attacks. So we just saw all those websites defaced here recently with the ISIS related
yeah, the
material
Ohio,
or whatever.
Ohio ones.
I suspect it's only a matter of time before you see those guys go into a completely destructive virus, like a crypto style virus that yep. says until you renounce, you know, by going here and signing yep. either a petition or a yep. thing before you, unless you do this, we're not handing out those keys.
That's what I was talking about. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for putting a point on and jinxing us, Jason.
Yeah.
Because
I do backups, so I don't care.
Right, right. Exactly.
He's actually wearing a shirt that says, I do backup.
Yeah.
I do many things.
beep, 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 beep.
Anything.
So, hey, guys, we're going to go to a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about something very interesting.
The energy sector.
Mm-hmm. Before that, we're going to talk about the joint cybersecurity unit that someone brought up today.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, we'll be back in about 5 minutes.
And we're back from segment one, and leading off for this segment, we're going to talk about Twitter. Actually, we're going to talk about the president and his tweets about joining together with Russia and building the world's best and tightest cybersecurity forces. No surprise to anybody in the room. Everybody saw the tweet and said, yeah, that's not going to happen. Collectively, the world said, yeah, we're on the same team here. That's probably not going to happen. He's backtracked off that story already for a litany of reasons. Can you guys, I mean, it's one of those things, hypothetically, if someone's not in the know about cybersecurity in the current threat stage, it sounds like a good idea, right? Let's get together two superpowers. We'll build a awesome big superpower Justice League cybersecurity team that will defend the world against all the bad people.
Who shares first is a question, right?
Yeah.
That's always right. You share yours first.
No. Step one, extradition. Okay, yeah, that's off the table. Let's not have a team together. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what do you guys feel about this? I mean, it's a... It's something that we wish could happen, and part of NATO, I think NATO, I didn't see the follow-up on the story. Did they actually take over Article 5 and create the cybersecurity division for the UN? I will research that as you guys discuss this one. Talks amongst yourselves.
So First of all, there's so many weird things about this, but I kind of feel like from a cooperation perspective, shouldn't we be focusing on whether or not we can shut down this ridiculous threat of this clown in North Korea? I mean, that's if we really want to have a joint task force on something, like,
amen.
Like, you know,
prove yourself first. If this can work and we can bring down North Korea together, then somehow it works, you mean?
I don't know.
Is that the test run we're going to go after?
I don't know. I just
redirect our attention.
There's so much posturing that's happening in the world of politics and
by the way, we always said Jason's sitting here with a stern look on his face. We always said we're avoiding politics.
Yeah, no religion, no politics. So yeah, so I'll get off my high horse on that in a second, but when you think about it, that was a pretty yeah, got to have some Kojones to suggest that.
Yeah, I mean, you guys mentioned what North Korea is doing. I don't know if you saw the news over the 4th, but they tested another ICBM.
ICBM, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this one, yeah. They came back and said, yeah, actually, they can touch Alaska with it. Not with a sizable payload yet,
yeah.
But in a short amount of time, I mean, flashback 2 years ago, oh, it's 10, 15, 20 years before they'll be able to hit us with a nuke, and now they're saying two. You know, that time is getting shorter and shorter. For me, and I think we're going to transition into the bigger stories here in the second segment about target attacks on critical infrastructure and energy, it is way easier for North Korea or our enemies to target through the internet rather than conventional war. And mm-hmm. We've seen that in Ukraine and in other areas. I mean, I can't remember. I think it was Sudan that was shut down. Somebody attacked Sudan's internet. Now, given they had like one big pipe coming into the country and they shut that one provider down. But we talk about what's happening in Ukraine and how it's going to be weaponized. And then you follow up with the UN talking about creating a cybersecurity division along with their military and air force. I think this is a bigger threat to me, that what's happening digitally and on the internet and the way our things are connected is way more scary to me than suicide bombers or people taking over airplanes or even chemical or virus outbreaks or nuclear. This stuff is real and it's
nuclear.
Nuclear.
Says Bush.
This is corpse all over again. Come
so,
on, Josh.
I mean, I guess the one thing is the topic
nuclear
came up because of the G20 summit, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess this is why we're bringing it up. So
G19.
Yeah. Well, not it's now. G19. Damn. So again, though, I mean, I guess the final thing is what Trump had said. Yeah, we did not make an agreement. This will not work. It did not happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But wouldn't it be – I mean, of course, they're bouncing the thought around. But wouldn't it be nice if we could somehow? I mean, I guess they're just saying stop the attacks maybe. Or
yeah.
Maybe that's where the final end was, is can we agree to stop throwing bombs at each other?
At least not be so obvious about it.
Right. So,
right.
I mean, I guess is that the takeaway that they're coming away of saying, okay, we're going to try and make these side deals with our nations that says we won't hack your infrastructure or your businesses, you don't hack ours. I mean, do we think that those would even be valid anyhow?
Cold War 2.0.
No.
I mean, that's really
yeah.
This,
no, yeah.
Legitimately, this is my generation's yeah. Cold War.
Right. It's a peace treaty. I mean, what do you think we would be able to have, just like you said, NATO? Would we be able to have a peace alliance of certain large, powerful countries that would be able to all agree and assign these accords, right?
I would hope for that, but honestly, I mean, the internet is the new battlefield, right? I mean, we're going to have Cold War internet. We're going to have active war internet. I mean, it seems like it's just changed, right?
I think
the playing
possibly.
Field is different.
You've got laws that are being discussed right now and maybe even being implemented that it would allow a country to attack with bombs a house that a hacker may reside in. Are you kidding me? That's a real thing. You can't even make this up anymore. It's like we're living in a time where there's so many stupid things that people think are acceptable.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I just, like you said, the first thing I mean that maybe is the olive branch is extradition, right? Can you no longer harbor?
That's step one.
Right.
It's got to be step one.
I mean, and of course, will all those other countries follow suit? I mean, I guess, yeah, we've got to get everybody that would agree to have some punishment. Without any punishment, why do you think the crimes are happening? Why do you think people are dipping in and giving it a try?
Well, I think you got to look at the varying levels of the way that people or nation states are really carrying out their attacks. And so you have in the Middle East, their primarily objective is to push down information, and same thing in North Korea. They're trying to suppress outside influence and get information about their citizens, some would argue here in the U.S. as well. But then you look at other countries like Russia that's actively targeting different countries and trying to take down infrastructure and do other things. And then you look at someone like China that their traditional MO has been, well, I need to get all the IP. That's their build their infrastructure and keep going. I've read a lot of articles lately that China is trying to at least cut back away from stealing all that IP. And now they've got a baseline. They're trying to put up their walls and make sure nobody gets their IP because they're dumping all this money into renewable resources and some of these next generation technologies that we basically set the ground for them. We said, well, this is how you build these things. Now they've got that IP. They're not attacking as much, and they want to legitimize what they're doing and become a powerhouse and basically take us out.
I would actually I would kind of agree with that. And some of the readings I've had recently were China's actually put online the first quantum layer defense kind of infrastructure. It's based on quantum theory and computing and everything. So it's, and I just read that one today too. So it kind of actually makes sense after what you just said. So they're protecting something pretty important.
Well, I think we all, I mean, for most countries, does anybody agree or not agree that we are way behind some of these other countries as far as cyber defense and attack units?
I think so.
From a military standpoint. So.
Yeah, I think we, from a military perspective, we have not put,
100%.
We have not put resources into that the way we should have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Of course. Here we go.
I disagree.
So, I mean, you've got so many different college think tanks, right? So you're seeing, like, when drones came out, you saw these incredibly, incredibly smart swarm drones and such. I can't say for sure, but where did all of these technologies go? Where did all of these, you know, engineers...
And what don't we know about?
You know, where did they go to? You look at some of these colleges like Harmon or whatever, and they've got... significant talent pool that they're pulling from, and these people all just disappear. You know, you talk to any of them and they say, okay, yeah, these are the college you go to if you want to be in these cybersecurity units like the NSA and CIA and FBI and whatever. They recruit heavily out of those places. So you see 10 years ago a swarm of drones that these guys have programmed. They disappear, and all of a sudden, what do we have? We just dropped a swarm of drones that look exactly like the ones those guys made 10 years ago. It's crazy. So I think we are innovators. I think the United States, personally, is on its A game. Are we necessarily monopolizing that stuff and monetizing it the way we could, weaponizing it the way we could? Probably not. You've got, you know,
Jason. I'm sorry to interrupt, but are you saying militarily, or are you just saying
aspects.
general research, general R&D?
I think we're ahead of the game in most all research on the planet. That's personal opinion. I read this stuff constantly. I was just telling Matt that I got to start getting him in the loop because I send this stuff out to our teams internally, like our academy, our assessment team.
Copy me in that stuff, man.
I'll really in. I just didn't want to be overly verbose with people, you know. So
that's why we're here.
I kept it to a smaller group, but I'll absolutely send it to you guys.
My stated goal for the rest of this year and all of next year is I feel like I've lost some of my relevance in terms of technical acumen. I mean, obviously I have. So I really want to get smart again. that's a big task. But I'm actually working on my CSSP and I want to get smart again. So
cool. Anyway,
please loop me on that stuff.
So,
sorry, I didn't mean to. You were on a great soapbox rant. I didn't mean to pull you away from that.
I feel that we're just up against. It's like when the Redcoats were coming up against all of these guerrilla tactics, right? They're fighting a war in a specific way, and we're not adapting to that. So, did the Russians hack our elections? Yes, they did. Right. But no, it wasn't probably the government like everybody equates it to. You say Russians, they immediately think the government. It is an absolute fact that the Russians are okay and look the other way with their hacker groups. They have gangs of street thugs, kids, that will do anything and hack anything in the Americas, and Russia will absolutely look the other way as long as they do work for them from time to time.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're Putin and you're sitting there on stage, no, we don't have hackers.
Right,
you know,
right, of course
we don't. We have these gangs that we just don't prosecute.
Right.
You know, that's totally different, but the same thing at the same time. So I think we're behind the eight ball, and we're behind the times, meaning that we're not allowed to fight back. Like, I would love to. You know, I have the skills. I've hacked into everything. I mean, pick a thing. I've broken into it professionally, you know. But, you know, at what point does my expertise not, you know, become relevant in a counterattack like that? You know, if I'm seeing, like, you know, we could do a thing and make a difference, we should be able to. But we have everything against us.
In the U.S., I guess, let me ask you that. If you did something and you decided to go, you know what, I'm going to attack Russia, does the U.S. extradite to Russia, and do you get prosecuted for attacking Russia or China?
In today's political climate, probably.
Yeah.
Probably hand us over and be like,
I mean, I've never really thought of that before, because you don't hear about, well, I'm the U.S. I mean, we hear it about ISIS. You know, U.S. hackers often attack ISIS, but no one's really on their team right now, so...
You saw the recent one, too, where Anonymous was going after and brought down some child pornography ranked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of that. It was, could we use some of those skills for...
For sure.
Do we do that?
Well, like, use our powers for good, right?
I guess what you're saying, too, is in the U.S., you know, we got to protect everybody's liberties so much, too, so that even that person that owns that business, do they have a right to have that business? It's kind of, you know, where we get to. I mean... So I guess there's just not enough teeth to a lot of that. Is everybody giving Anonymous a pat on the back? Hell yeah. I mean, I'll send a donation right now for it. I mean, good work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you're right. I mean, the environment is just set up where we're not necessarily sensationalizing it. I think that we are making strides in that area. But I think that Russia is definitely very much more proactive and their approach and how they're aggressive. Their aggression is a lot different. We're very, very passive, I would say.
I'm using a very specific point, but the context should mean all the things. It doesn't matter if you're making jet fuel or, you know, a new technology of any sort. If we're saying that we're dealing with countries like China, where we've known for decades that they're doing everything they can to steal our intellectual property, the IP that we keep talking about, then, you know, we should be able to deal with that appropriately. If we're talking about North Koreans and every 4th of July for the last 5-6 years now, they've shot off another missile just to prove a point, you got to start wondering what is it they're doing. Are they getting us used to them shooting a missile off on the 4th of July, so we're not expecting one on the 3rd anymore, and they just shoot the one that they've been waiting to shoot off on the 3rd? You know, it's
I mean, do you propose that we're using more baits, where we're baiting with stuff that we're developing, so then we can kind of go ahead and sock them back in the mouth, or gather information on their side? I mean, at least
I wish we would.
I mean, I know that we're very passive in any of that. I mean, I'm not sure.
I wish we would. I just don't know. I wish I had more insight into those things. You know, I just haven't done the research like I have other things. So, like, when we all started talking election hacking, I went out there and I looked and I looked and I looked, and sure as hell, there's a big-ass botnet out there, and it seems to be, you know, doing the I'm going to send a lot of negative responses to this thing because it's for Hillary Clinton, and I'm going to send a lot of positive responses, you know, for this thing because it's for Trump. And we know that it exists, and nobody wants to believe it. You know, they all want to do the snowflake denial. You know, you're a snowflake.
Right.
No, I'm not a snowflake. I'm telling you, I've researched this and I've looked at it. You know, well, that's not hacking. No, it's using technology to sway public opinion. You know, what we're looking at from a hacking perspective is, we hacked this email server and we were able to put these things out there to show that this person's crooked, you know, or doing a thing that would be politically incorrect, and now that's swayed opinion even more. So that's what that really references from a hacking perspective, and, you know, this is something that the rest of the world knows that the Russians do, and they know, and it's so prevalent over there that it's commonplace, and, like, all people understand it, and they don't suffer from it as much as we did in this particular instance because they're used to it. So when you say, you know, do you believe that we're behind?
Yes and no. I do. It's situations like that where you have to ask yourself, why is it that we're so far behind in facts that we just don't want to believe that these certain things are occurring as a mass? You know, the big mob does not want to believe. But you know, we know angels exist. So.
That was a long answer to a short question, man. I feel swayed by your enormous intellect and also a little dismayed. But you know, this is going to be a random question. What is it going to take to make America great again?
We elected Trump.
I literally had this epiphany just this morning, and this is not scripted in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I was talking to Will at work,
yeah,
and I've never once – I'm sure somebody can tell me what it is, but I've never once talked to a person and said, can you tell me what that means? I feel like we live in the best country on the planet. I've been only to a few spots. I imagine like Fiji's probably pretty awesome. You know, I assume. I've never been there, but I can't make the assumption that – we are absolutely the best, but I live here. I love this place. Yep. I think we do some really cool things. But at the end of the day, I haven't had one person tell me actually what that means, what that statement means. We're going to make America great again. This morning, because we were having a conversation about this, we're going to work with the Russians to make this cybersecurity. I'm sitting there like, I just figured it out. He's moving the goalpost down so far that whoever moves in next will end up making America great again.
Right.
Like, he's absolutely destroying so many things, like the EPA and whatever. I don't want to go down this road. The next person will make America back to being great.
I just keep waiting for Ashton Kutcher to come out and be like, oh, you got punked. Like,
right.
Kidding.
Psych.
But in when you're saying make America great again, I think a lot of people, especially the younger generation, they forget, you know, where we saw that prosperity and all that growth was because half the world was still recovering from back to back, you know, short term wars that destroyed all the infrastructure, that completely laid waste to entire areas. And on the infrastructure front, I think that's where the U.S. is vulnerable now. And look at my sweet segue skills getting into action here.
Wait for it.
We're going to talk about a tax on the energy sector and infrastructure in the U.S.
Hello.
So right now there's a number of studies coming out about spear phishing and other attacks being carried out on the energy firms here in the U.S. And as of right now, a lot of the stories that we're reading, it's kind of widespread. They're using similar attacks that we've seen again and again. For me, I was reading the article here that kind of got brought up. There's no evidence to suggest that the same phishing email supplied a virus that can manipulate industrial control systems. However, that seems to be the local public relations guy saying, yeah, we were compromised, but not compromised because the systems are apart. Yeah. And the only way to make them come together is if someone, you know, walked from one door to another and or dropped a USB key. I'm a little alarmed at some of the PR's people's kind of feedback on these attacks that are taking place.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here is because we didn't have a big incident is what I'm taking from these stories.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to be the yet guy because, you know, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but...
But you just said yet.
Yeah,
thank you, everybody. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Knocking. So
I thought you said yep.
Yep. So kind of stemming off of that beautiful segue and kind of building on the actual stories that are on there, so thank you very much for that, Matt. There have been, and they're undeniable, they have happened, they're admitted, they're found, they're documented by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. A recent attack, a cyber attack, was conducted against a nuclear power facility in Kansas. So, and specifically, it's the one in Wolf Creek near Burlington, Kansas. Mm-hmm. So, for those people with their map out right now, I want to find
there.
Kansas because it's the hardest one to find.
Yeah.
It's the weird, perfectly square one in the middle of the country no one goes to.
Customer? Data centers there?
Really? I was actually
shocked
that
the state of Kansas before, and I've seen their range. They call it their cyber.
They can't put data centers in Kansas, right?
No. Yeah. There's not enough people there. I didn't think there was enough people there actually to facilitate the need
for a nuclear
power plant.
Because
you need a ton of people.
I think the state of Kansas is one of, I want to say, 6 or 7 states that actually has what they would call a cyber, a full, you know, cyber security range.
Wow. Let's see how that worked for them.
But yeah.
That's great. So,
we were just talking about this earlier, that is it Indy? Who was it we were talking about? Indy or somebody has a cyber range that is a physical city.
Wow!
Yeah, we got to see it's like a mile square or something like that. We saw it at a convention that we were at recently, and they multi use it. So what does that mean? They've got drug enforcement units using it to do like breaches of buildings and stuff like that. They do it for use it for hostage negotiations. The whole thing is a regular physical building environment with streetlights and all of that, except for everything is compartmentalized to that physical 1 mile square space. So all of the buildings and all of the infrastructure all run from there, so they can do cybersecurity and cyber activity there. So they can cause, you know, the lights to all change. They can shut the power off. They can do all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
This was just at a InfoGuard convention we were at. I'm going to forget where it was located, but
Notre Dame. Sorry, Dan. Wow. We stole from your story.
No, Kansas. Okay. It's all good. So to kind of go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing they cited that there was an attack.
Cited that there absolutely was an attack, and on you got both sides of the coin here. For example, Bill Gross, who's actually with the actual Nuclear Energy Institute there in Kansas. And he's with a lobbying group, so keep that in mind. There's your grain of salt, right? Mm-hmm. Is there no cause for worry, end quote, right? On the other side of the spectrum, you've got the FBI and Department of Homeland Security saying that it appeared to be a determined effort to map out the network for future attacks, end quote. So, I mean, you've got one extreme to the other. And in the middle, you've got a nuclear power plant. Yeah. So some pretty volatile stuff, right?
In the same article, they're saying it's a years-long, well-crafted spear phishing. This isn't just something that a couple of guys put together. This is very targeted and a deep probing type of attack.
When have we ever had a conversation where they said, yeah, we found the hacker yesterday, you know, the day after? It's always, no, it was 6, 8, 10 months or a year or even 2 years down the road before we found them and what they were doing. So that really, again, just comes back to me in that this is standard stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know? Guess who the U.S. officials are saying they suspect in this, by the way? Shocker.
Italy.
Foreign governments, including... Rhymes with?
Apica?
Rhymes with?
Rhymes with Busha.
Yes, Russia.
Russia, yep.
So there you go. There's our go-to, our scapegoat, right? So
cool hacking group name, though.
Yeah.
Energetic Bear.
Musha.
Energetic Bear.
That's the name of the group.
Oh, man.
Sounds like the Vatican.
So kind of put some middle ground here, right? We've got one extreme, Bill Gross. We've got the other hand, FBI and Department of Homeland Security. Kind of in the middle is this guy named Marty Rosenberg. He's the editor of Energy Times, right? And he's saying that basically, and I quote, utilities have publicly reported that they are under attack constantly, daily, by bad actors, cyber terrorists, foreign governments, criminal elements that are probing their systems, trying to get control of the data about customers, about energy use. Okay, so... I mean, I'll put it out there right now. I'm not sure that it's the use of energy in our country that they're so much worried about, other than maybe just creating some chaos and shutting the power down, which is the critical infrastructure. It's a long-standing first act of war. You find out where they cut off the supply lines, the power, whatever it is. You figure out how it works. You map it out so you can turn it off later on whenever you want.
Well, and
it's a sanctioned company or country that doesn't have nuclear technology, and they're trying to get every piece of information that they can so they can start making their own nuclear power plants.
Versus working with the Global Nuclear Commission to actually extend a hand and say, hey, listen, I'd like to sit down with you and talk to you like a normal human being and learn how you did what you did, because I'd like to reproduce that in my own country.
Well, then we don't get to fire off Stuxnet.
Right.
I'm gonna get out my tinfoil hat here.
It's beautiful, too.
The attention to this particular segment of energy is in rapid decline in the U.S. Everybody's anti... You know, we need to move these out. So in lieu of current policies that are moving away from renewables, you are left with standard stuff like coal and gas and some of those other types of, I don't want to say primitive, but primitive types of technologies that are used to produce energy. If you can do something like disrupt nuclear or wind or solar in energy-starved sectors like California and cause rolling blackouts, what's going to be the repercussion? Well, they're going to say, well, we need to go and we need to fire up these other different types of technologies. Yes, it's kind of a little bit of a stretch, but if you can start manipulating the energy market in different ways, or even the gas, I mean, if you looked at how we're starting to be more dependent at home on energy, mm-hmm. if you can start manipulating that, if you're one of a key exporter, what better way to make sure your currency stays up in the market and that solvent. You're exporting stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're 100% dependent and you start looking at what China has done as far as manipulating things like special minerals and magnets and those types of things are being used in, they're manipulating mm-hmm. those global exports. I could see this being used not just in this particular segment, but in a lot of other different ones to make the market prices go up, to make it a lot more.
Yeah. We're trying to destabilize a lot of things at the same time, right? The actual power itself, the grid, the financial side of things, everything, right? Anything they can do to disrupt it. But to your point, Matt, actually, there was a report, several reports, actually, this one notably by Penn Energy. In the last 4 years, a marked decline from over 120 gigawatts down to below 100 now in the year 2017 over the last 5 years in power output from nuclear energy. So it's absolutely on the decline. They predicted to go down below almost down to 70 gigawatts by the year 2050.
So I would like to see where foreign entities or even crime groups are investing in even our sovereign type of energy companies. Like if I'm a natural gas company or, mm-hmm. or coal, what's to say I'm just not buying stock in these companies where it's really low and mm-hmm. then I drive down this other energy source to make the stocks rise in taking a non-legitimate way and then yeah. making my legitimate stocks go through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just another way of, we've seen manipulation. Jason, you're just talking about, we're going to manipulate things to make our currency valid or to get money out mm-hmm. of Bitcoin into the real world. This is, yes, I think there is some other ulterior motives here.
Yeah.
But it really comes always down to money. And criminal
Follow
organizations
always,
are
right?
doing stuff like this every mm-hmm. day.
Yeah. So to finish up that report, though, I'd be remiss if I didn't finish up and let you know what's going on with other types of fuels. What do you guys think is number one in these different studies that they've all done by far? It's not even close. By the year 2050, the number one is?
Natural gas.
Natural gas. Yeah. Followed closely by?
Solar.
Renewables. Then coal, then nuclear, then petroleum at the very bottom.
Really?
So, yeah.
Okay.
And in the next 5 to 10 years, they say there's going to be a very steep decline in coal. Very steep. Right now it's number one.
So if we were really, really smart and forward thinking, we would put our kids in a position to really take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Securing that.
Just saying.
Yeah. Coal's going down Renewables, because Trump right? will be out of office then? Is that why?
So what I've gathered yeah. from this last 10 minutes is that you guys are saying that the coal industry is trying to hack nuclear? And
that's what I heard.
No, yeah. I developed the gravity light,
it's
so
a cage match.
I'm going to have you hack all the energy agencies, so then you'd have to buy a gravity light.
So like one of the last pen tests I was on, it was complete within scope. These are what I like to call the mistaken scopes, where they told us that this is the scope. Our PM said, okay, you know, verify that. They verified it, and we said, okay, we need it verified one more time that this is indeed the correct scope. And then we went, and I'm sitting in there, and I'm calling my boss, and I'm saying, hey, I just got into their entire electrical grid because they've got a solar array there. Do I shut it off? What's the thing? They said that we're supposed to get into any of these IP addresses. So we're calling them just to re-verify, and they're like, no, like you should not be in there at all. And I'm like, well, you should probably not have it, you know, solar as the password, you know, to get in here. This is bad juju, people. Right. So based on what I saw, it was a
solar
really
to
cool
be a hard
interface.
Word to spell, depending on right. what. You know,
it was a really cool it was a really cool interface, and it showed you the amount of money that they were actually pushing back into the infrastructure and selling back to the power company. Yeah. It was all in the GUI, and like you could adjust things, and I was just like, wow, if I even there was no like fail safes. Like if I clicked a thing, it would just move it. So I was like, okay, we're done with this immediately.
So did we just reverse engineer Nikola Tesla?
My hero, and
all of his dreams and thoughts.
Dan's hero too.
Oh, my hero, big time, yeah. And the fact that every house will have its own ability to generate more than enough surplus power to generate its needs, solar, wind, and have a house battery Tesla.
It would shock you. Thermal.
Oh, yeah.
Thermal is awesome.
Or thermal.
Yeah.
So is there a way we get there without the world completely going to hell in a handbasket first?
Only if you move to the UP.
Yeah. Exactly.
The challenging thing is your house battery's going to have to get firmware updates,
and then you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. DJI's got you held hostage.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. It's all drone batteries.
They're farming all the energy back to themselves.
Right. I'm going off the grid tomorrow, guys. Bye. See ya.
So many things, and I'm sorry. I'm doing like a help desk call right now where and this is what's hilarious about this is I'm literally on my phone, and I have full control over this server that that I'm on. That's a complete.
Is it your server?
He's actually hacking a nuclear power plant.
Well, this just goes to show you that it doesn't even take much anymore. This is my cell phone.
Yeah.
And I have full control over their Active Directory, their main DC.
He has a flip phone, by the way. You can't see it. It's pretty sad.
But I've got it dialed in. So there's one thing about this that kind of brings a number of the different things that we've been talking about tonight together. So we talked about the ransomwares, and we talked about how little some of these ransomwares actually make. And then we've talked about the power industry. And one thing really comes to mind to me was that we had the situation here in Michigan, I think it was Lansing, where it's the Board of Water and Light got hit with the crypto style virus.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, rumor is that if you think about these guys only making like $300 in Bitcoin or 300 Bitcoin or whatever it was they made, they've got one directed hit at that one power company, and it probably made them hell of a lot more money because not only did they hit them once, but then they hit them again by leaving another one in there to detonate.
Yeah.
So how much money did they spend? You know, so you've got a scenario now where you got so many different reasons why somebody would want to break into a power plant, whether it be nuclear or otherwise.
Yeah. It's like Kickstarter for hackers.
And by the way, whoa.
Ooh, let's get it.
Whoa. Yeah. Do it. Take that back.
Register that domain name.
I'm on it.
Hackstarter?
Hackstarter. I like that. Going there now. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to chew on there, man. A lot to chew on. And
delicious.
Deep.
Deep.
So does the Department of Energy actually collaborate then with a lot of the other NSA and a lot of the others to actually, you know, when you look at that, as you're saying, where we're seeing we're investing a lot of our technology, you know, the one, look at Department of Energy, I mean, they still go low tech, and that's their approach.
I don't know. And here it says they're helping defend. It's been from many of the things that I read, and we just had I'm blanking on the guest's name, but for the Michigan Cyber Corps, they talked about, well, if something goes wrong, the Michigan State Police are in charge. I think we're new into this industry as far as what happens when the lights go out and who's in charge. But I think we're making progress, and we're getting there, and these agencies are continually working together. They may be more together than they want us to know. You know, the Department of Energy might be.
We also don't really know how many incidents there actually were. You know, some of that stuff just doesn't get publicized. We just don't know about it.
True. All right, guys. Well, any parting thoughts on this segment before we come back and get into way more lighthearted stuff?
Back to basics, man. Back to basics. Patch, secure, lock things down, get back to your basics.
Back up all the things and test those backups.
Yeah.
Invite Jason to your house to do a free pen test.
It's
penetrating.
Homeland Security's doing that now.
Jason's a penetrating man.
Off. I'll just use those terms. It makes me angry that they're offering free pen tests.
Right. Don't move to Kansas.
Amateurs.
All right. Cool. Well, we are going to break for a few short minutes here and come back in segment 3. All right. And we're back. We did figure out some really important information, hackstarter.com is taken, according to
Yes.
So we're not going to get become millionaires over that one. But we are back for the third segment, and we're going to kind of just talk about us, stuff we're doing, fun stuff. First thing was Todd has got some updates on Sweet Arcades and a different take on the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, so I myself have a MAME machine. MAME stands for Multi-Arcade Machine Emulator. So M-A-M-E. I guess I can
MAME is not lame.
Yeah, it's basically open source software. A lot of times you can play it on your laptop, but I actually have a whole cabinet built out. I'll give a shameless plug to the company I got it for, too. They have no idea that I'm giving them this plug, but dreamhomearcades.com. I did some research. You can customize yours. I did a pedestal machine. So it basically has eight buttons on each side, I should say. Six main, two on the bottom. I have the guns, the laser guns, and
Todd's got guns.
Pew, 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 pew. And they do come with normal Xbox controllers. So some of the newer games will use the normal Xbox controllers. I don't know. To me, I think Dave's been over to play some of the games. There are some very
pretty nice, freaking fantastic.
Nice you invited Dave, by the way.
Yeah.
Thanks for the rest of
the Jabber team's left off.
Well, I knew that he wouldn't drink much because he had a long drive, so I figured, hey, why not?
When did that take place?
That and I don't drink.
I was going to say, usually that's my excuse to drink more. Be like, I had a long drive. I'm just staying the night here and right next to the machine.
So I guess it was kind of an open topic. I mean, I thought to bring up MAME. You know, a lot of the open source, most of the emulators you'll be able to pull down and add in. I think when I first got the machine, they had preloaded with about 24,000 games. I think now they're if you go to their website, they're claiming over like 56,000.
Wow.
The one thing that's really cool, though, is Hyperspin. If you look up Hyperspin, Hyperspin is actually the front end that kind of brings all of these together. So basically what you can do is take Hyperspin and pull all these collections of games, like say Capcom or Midway games, and then you can pull all of those games in. The same thing for console games. If you want to pull every old Atari, I had a Intellivision as a kid, so I can go back and play the old skiing game I used to do, or Utopia.
Great game.
Same thing for Sega. And Sega CD, Sega Genesis. I played Sega Genesis in college.
Intellivision?
Television.
How does that work for licensing, though?
ColecoVision.
Vectrex.
I mean, loved Vectrex.
Is it illegal what they're doing? They're basically, you're not paying for that software. So is it, does it become public domain after a certain amount of years, even from a software perspective?
Yeah, you can actually pull, I mean, they call them ROMs. So if you were to do a Google search and look for ROMs, MAME ROMs, you can pull them down. There is no...
I can Google a lot of things and pull a lot of content down pretty easily.
That's true.
Doesn't make it illegal.
Is there a copyright for having a ROM or an emulator? Yeah, I have not seen where that would be a copyright infringement. I'm sure that maybe somebody out there in Radio Land may contradict, but MAME has been around for a while, and you can run you know, the emulator, and Hyperspin is just a nice way that it aggregates them all. So you can spin through this menu. And say I click on Commodore 64 or I click on Midway Capcom games. It'll actually just have all of the games sorted so you can launch them.
That's cool.
And really it's just a sequence of the keys. So I hold the start button down, hit button one, and it gives me credits. there's of course, a cheat menu. If you hold the start button and hit button five, it brings you the cheat menu. And you can actually, and there's dip switches, so you can actually change and say I want five players or seven players versus three.
Steroids. Woo.
Yeah, the track and field, that's one of the cheats. So on track and field, you can actually give them steroids.
I've got original Xbox that we modded to do the exact same thing. It's got all the Super Nintendo and Nintendo games all downloaded.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
But this sounds like an
adult way to do this. It looks very fancy and professional.
Mm. Yeah, it puts it together in a really nice kind of interface. I think Hyperspin is a nice way that you can gather them together where you're not just throwing a bunch of ROMs into a bucket and kind of go through them. The one thing that's interesting on the old school arcade games is you can actually go in and set favorites. So Hyperspin gives you this way that you can set favorites in each one. So if I want to go and find... go to the letter G. I just hit the joystick to the left, and it starts going through all the letters. So I can save favorites, and then it'll allow me to start getting to those ones quicker.
Wow. That's cool.
We'll definitely have to. We'll have an adventure. I mean, I've been playing like Big Buck Hunter and all those little old games.
Have us over. We'll have a game.
We're definitely.
Tournament.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I have a two person kind of game, but I mean, of course, if there's four players, you just move out of the way.
That's
but
cool.
You can have it where I have a pedestal and then the TV's on the wall, so. Basically, it's just an HDMI cable that you connect to it. You could have it where they build these out with four players. Wow. So there's four joysticks. And, of course, just like games like Zaxxon, it has the hand shifter. You know how you'd have to fly up and down?
Yeah, yeah.
And the Zaxxon had the normal trigger handle.
It's like something out of a cockpit of a jet fighter.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can get different handles. The other thing, you can even have the spinners. And the spinner would be things like Tempest.
Tempest. I
hated some of those
that
other
game.
Games just because as you put these emulators into the machine. Like, the one game that's almost impossible to really get right is Star Wars. Because you had to tilt forward. It had the hand things at the arcade.
You could do the, you could play the X-Wing, or you could be the bad guys and the TIE Fighters.
Right, you'd turn it, then you'd have to tilt forward and down. So it's a little bit different when you look at the controls, but you can get in the menus and actually each one to tell how you want to kind of make the X and Y axis. It's in Q-Bert's the other one that's weird, and I didn't realize this until I got the game. But Q-Bert in the real arcade, they turned the joystick at a 45-degree angle.
Oh, for the pyramid that he's going up.
For the pyramid. Okay. So you can go up, down, right, left, and it would actually take him on the angles. So it's a little bit weird trying to control it when you don't have the joystick.
My two favorite games were Congo Bongo, which is an odd one. It's not one you hear a lot about. And then
Do you have Congo Bongo?
That's a good question. I'll have to look it up in my
I'd be shocked if you didn't in that catalog. And then Gauntlet, which is that's actually designed for four joysticks.
I love Gauntlet.
They remade it recently, by the way. They modernized it.
So I have the newer one on there, too. So it has the newer Gauntlet because it's in one of the computer game packs. So there's a lot of games that are in there that are...
Do you have to buy those packs or you just download them?
No, they all came included. So like the one that I play a lot is Deal or No Deal. Me and my daughter always play that. You know, you have to pick the briefcases you have the $1 million and... But that newer Gauntlet is in there. There's like Celebrity Deathmatch, which is also, remember the old MTV show?
Wow.
So very similar.
Those some Deal or No Deal's got to be fairly new as far as.
There are a lot of newer games in
this, dude.
Mine is a dual boot basically machine. So I can boot on another hard drive that has newer games on it too. So the newer games is like Mortal Kombat X, the one before the newer one. And it has all the great graphics. It has all the bells and whistles to
it. Cool.
Even like portals, it has portals from like your Xbox game where you'd have to shoot the portals in the wall and figure out a way to get
Portal.
Out.
Yeah, it's a great game.
So it's not limited.
Infringement on the newer games.
I never stated now that I have this machine.
Yeah, Xbox. I mean,
they're selling hundreds and hundreds of them. Yeah.
Hypothetically speaking, if I own one of these.
I guess the disclaimer is I bought it from dreamhomemakerarcades.com. You don't have to go after them.
Yeah, that's what my lawyer will defend to death. Yeah.
Xbox and Microsoft are actively selling things like Street Fighter on their game thing. And they just launched a new service. I don't know if you guys all have Xbox Live and Gold. I do. And one of the new services they launched for $15 a month, you get access to an entire back catalog of games. And they go back to all the Fable games and a whole myriad. The first company to do that was EA Sports. And they started launching a subscription service for only like $7 a month. You got a 15% discount on everything you bought through EA Sports. So if you are fans of Madden or any of the sports games, basically.
Techno Bowl.
Yeah, well, they fall kind of into that.
Dating myself.
But what they started doing was
Brutal Bowls.
Once you bought that service, you could get access to the older service. So for 2017, you had access to all the 2016 games.
Wow.
All you could eat for free for $8 a month.
That's cool. That's
and crazy. So for me as a sports fan, I only fire up the basketball games during basically NCAA tournament. I'm like, I want to play some basketball games for a little bit. But it's kind of cool, that they're starting to go in and get these subscription services where you can go out and grab.
Jason, I think we need to take care of having one of those Dream arcades in maybe your office. Yeah, Ferndale.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I would totally be down without question.
Yeah,
without question.
Seems like a good interview tool. Can you beat me at Street Fighter 2?
Huh?
It might be cool.
Seems like a great workshop.
Can you get by my sweep the leg technique with Raiden and Mortal Kombat?
Sweep the leg, Johnny.
We used to play Don't Shit Your Pants for interviews. That's a legit thing. We used to do that.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I think his name was Adrian. When he had his interviews, he used to play. They played it with me when I interviewed, and they were like, "Here's a computer in front of you. The game is called Don't Shit Your Pants. You've got 60 seconds, and you know, go." And it was a text-based, like those old Commodore 64 style games, mm-hmm. where you just had kind of a picture and you would type in commands and the guy would do the thing or whatever. And it was kind of, you know, common sense, you know, put hand on doorknob, turn doorknob, pull door, you know, stuff like that. And you've only got 60 seconds, so you're like, you know, kind of thing. And it's really just an idea to see, like, what is it you have to do or what are you capable of? And clearly the best answer was, you know, drop trout shit on the floor. You know, that would be the easiest because you're not going to shit your pants, right?
Wow. You're standing west of a White House.
Right.
You see a mailbox.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to say, wow, you brought some real actual intelligence to this third segment. We're like talking about something like interview and then drop trowel.
Yeah, so
you're hired.
So I just found this. I just found this fortune in my bag. It says you will soon be receiving some wonderful news. Wonder what that is. Hey guys, we're gonna leave you with this final thought. My thought for the day is live life to its fullest and then purchase a small dog. How about you guys?
Hot dogs and hamburgers.
Hot dogs and hamburgers. How about you, Jason?
I would say that archive.org is a little bit more than just websites. Go
wait,
there.
Wait, tell us about that a little more.
And then go there.
In less than 60 seconds.
Go there. All right.
So we were talking about the video games real quick. They have all of these video games now on archive.org. You can go there in your web browser and play all these things. So Commodore 64, Every cabinet game ever played from the 80s, you know, Tempest, you name it, are all on archive.org. Check it out.
That's awesome. Danny boy.
Life is short. Sometimes you just got to put a loaf of bread in a sack and jump over your back fence. Jim Muir.
Fair enough.
Wow. All right.
What's you, Tato?
I just being in the computer industry, my get outside, get some sun, ride a mountain bike, enjoy the outdoors. We live in a wonderful state.
Mm-hmm. Why do you have to take jabs at Jason, right? The last thing about getting the sun and everything else. We're all tan, sunburned.
That was no shot.
Thucydides says.
This is Jason Tan, by the way.
Yeah. Thucydides says the secret to happiness is freedom, and the secret to freedom is courage. Hey, everybody, thanks for checking us out. Matt, where can you find us?
SecurityJabber.com and on Twitter at SecurityJabber. One word. And then on Facebook, facebook.com/secjabber. Because again,
Facebook
hates us and we can't be security jabber.
Careful. See you.
Love
right
you all.
Next
good night.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.